the Rise Up See Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up See Red podcast of SR Cardinals Talk on the web. I'm your host, Jess Root from CardsWire.com, the USA Today NFL wire site covering, of course, the Arizona Cardinals. Recording not at home as I'm out in Texas visiting my oldest daughter, but that doesn't matter for recording. It's the internet. Joining me is Seth Cox from RevengeOfTheBirds.com. As we are in the second week of NFL free agency, episode 648. Seth, it was a busy week last week, but things have slowed down significantly, have they, for both the Cardinals and the rest of the NFL?
Yeah, it's been an interesting week just in general. I mean, it was fast and furious, and then it's slowed to a drip, basically, right? Like, we get one or two little things a day, but nothing extraordinary, nothing otherworldly. Mostly now it's, you know, focus time on the NFL draft and something we'll discuss on today's show, you know, and kind of putting the pieces together of, okay, free agency is over, your team has done X and Y, now how does the draft factor into Z in that process?
Yeah, and there are two moves that the Cardinals made that we did not get to talk about. They are little ones. And you know, one of the things that in fact, Howard Balzer, my other writer over at CardsWire, noted is that the contract, he usually gets those contracts fairly quickly after they're signed. They're crawling right now. They're not getting... he's still waiting on a few of them, and normally he rips those out fairly quickly, and it seems like the league office is taking their time. We know that there's a couple of moves around the NFL that everyone's still waiting for, and that's I think that will impact more than anything mock drafts moving forward, would be the decision of Aaron Rodgers, the decision of Russell Wilson, particularly, especially Aaron Rodgers, because that will we can then start really sort of projecting which teams at the top of the draft are going to go with quarterbacks, don't you think?
Yeah, and it's interesting to think that Steelers-Giants situation is all kind of in limbo until Aaron Rodgers gets back from his latest ayahuasca journey. And so, you know, it's interesting because this is, you know, another offseason of this, but it's also interesting in that it goes to something you and I talk about quite often. What is your plan? And, you know, we've long said that when people throw out ideas of like, hey, just trade Kyler, we don't necessarily go, yeah, that's a great idea, or no, you're an idiot. Like, but we go, okay, what's your plan? And you know, more often than not, they go, well, you know, they'll figure something. Like, you can go get Sam Darnold for, you know, $100 million, $120 million or whatever. And it's like, okay, so are you improving? And so that's the thing is, like, you look at the Steelers, you look at the Giants, and you go, is this the way you want to go about your off seasons? Because that's the thing is, like, if you don't have a quarterback, then you're just constantly searching for a quarterback. And we've, you know, been part of that process too for the Arizona Cardinals. And you know, it's not any fun either. Like, there's no, that's not a fun way to go about your offseason. And so, like you said, until those dominoes fall, and not that those dominoes would preclude anybody from drafting a quarterback, but it changes the way you attack it, correct? Like, you don't,
yeah,
if you're the Giants and you end up signing Aaron Rodgers, you go, okay, if we have Cam Ward as a 10 and Shedeur Sanders as a 7.5, we don't have to draft Shedeur Sanders at wherever they're drafting. I mean, is it three? I don't.
Yeah.
So, you know, we don't have to do that. But if we don't have that, it doesn't really matter what our grades are on these guys. We just have to get somebody in that's not a four, right? And so that,
yes,
that is, you know, what it comes down to. And we joke about it, but the reality is like when you move on or make decisions for that quarterback position, that needs to be the thought process. And you know, one of the things that we try to do is from an intelligent standpoint is say, like, would JG and Monty, like, would they be able to go to Michael Bidwell and be like, hey, this is our plan moving forward. We're going to be awful next year because we want to move on from Kyler. And we might be able to get Aaron Rodgers. If not, you know, we might draft somebody on day two, but we'll go forward with Jacoby Brissett. You know, the same guy that just won one game last year. We'll go forward, or Clayton too, or whatever, you know. And so that is the whole thing. And so, like you said, until those dominoes fall, we'll continue to see, you know, Shedeur Sanders. We'll continue to see these mock drafts that have Jackson Dart going at 22 or whatever the Steelers
are drafting. Or number nine, which right. was, holy cow. Holy cow, the Jackson Dart go into was that Kuipers at number nine? And we're going to talk about the mock draft, but let's start kind of talking about the two minor moves that the Cardinals made after our last show. Two guys, truth is, you probably haven't heard of. Now, if you follow what the Cardinals have been doing, you probably heard the transactions. The Cardinals landed former Bears and Seahawks offensive lineman Jake Curran, and then also former Los Angeles Chargers and Dallas Cowboys receivers Simi Fehoko. Two guys that probably get minimum contracts. Curran played 10 games and started two for the Bears last year, started a couple games at guard. He's started a handful of games at tackle as well. He played 3 years for the Seahawks. And he's a big dude. Well, long dude, 6'6", 316, going to be 28, 27 years old. Like, I don't see that move. Like, and he comes from, what, that terrible Bears offensive line. And you look at that, and you're like, Cardinals kind of still need a starting right guard. When they made that room move, we're like, that better not be their starter.
Right. And, you know, like you said, last year played 260 snaps on the offensive line, 239 at left guard, 21 at right tackle. The year before that, he played 294 snaps, 6 at right guard, 288 at right tackle. So to your point, you go, where does this guy fit? I mean, he's been mostly a backup right guard and then a starting swing tackle, which I don't know how that works, if I'm being completely honest.
Like, I wonder if basically he's slated to be like this year's Tristan Colon, though Colon was more guard center. We did see him in training camp take a few tackle reps out of necessity, or I think he might have been a tackle during one of the preseason games too, which was fun. I'm guessing that would kind of be the role that we'd had, and I kind of want to see his contract, one, to see how much it is, and two, how much is guaranteed, because that will kind of tell you how much they like him, right?
Yeah, and you look at it, I mean, even going back, PFF's great for charting. And, you know, he, in the preseason, for instance, last year, so 24, he played 156 snaps in the preseason, all at right tackle. So, and then, you know, the year before that, he played 12 at right guard and 121 at right tackle. So basically what that's telling you is he's a right tackle that can fold into guard, that can step in at left tackle in a super pinch, right? Like, or left guard, sorry, in a super pinch. Like, it's not ideal, but he's mostly a tackle that can fold into guard. He's been mostly on the right side of the offensive line.
Would you say that this lends itself to believe that maybe Jonah Williams' injury is serious enough that he won't be able to start the season, which hastened the signing for Kelvin Beachum to be the starter to then make Curran slash Christian Jones more the backup?
Yeah, or, you know, they're going in with the idea, and this is always how it should go. I won't say how it does go, but how it should go in theory is they're going, hey, we want Christian Jones to be the starter. But we're talking about a guy that spent most of the season on injured reserve and then, you know, played minimally when he came back. So he may not be ready. And if he's not ready to start, he's going to get all the reps and he's going to do everything in practice. And then Jake Curran will be active on game days over Christian Jones, right? Like, that's typically how that goes, because they're going to say to themselves, like, we don't want to put him in a position to blow his potential that we see or that we like. And then
number two, they're trying to win games this year. So they don't want,
correct.
They don't want to, like, one, it's one thing when you have like a 2023 season, it's completely different when in 2025, you're trying to win games. And so unless he is at least stable, consistent, you don't want to put him out there where you're going to get your quarterback killed.
But also think about this, Jess. If he's not the backup right tackle, he's the backup right guard. So in an essence, you're basically saying, like, hey, we've got this guy that can do either. And like you said, we don't have his contract numbers yet. They're you know, leaking out. I don't even know, like, what's happening with it. But you're saying basically, like, hey, this is our break in case of emergency plan if this guy can't go. And if not, he's a body for the summer, for everything else, until Jonah's back, and then we're good to go. And also, it's like one of those things too. It's like, hey, if we don't get, you know, and no insight, no nothing, just throwing a name out there. Like, hey, if we don't get Josh Simmons at the pick we want him at, and we don't love anybody else on day two, then we got this guy in house that we're ready to go. Like, that's how I look at this whole signing.
Good. Now the guy that I actually think is an intriguing upside signing, and that's Simi Fehoko, 6'4", 215, receiver, played, he was drafted by the Cowboys. I think it was a fifth round pick. Played last season, it might have been the last two seasons for the LA Chargers.
Yep, last two seasons.
And fast. Like, at the combine, he was a sub 4.45. He was 4.44 at, you know, at 6'6. I mean, 6'4, that's really, really good. And I, like, he's another guy that's been to Stanford. So now they've got some Stanford guys in Fehoko and Michael Wilson and Elijah Higgins to go with that, their receivers coach of Drew Turrell, who is a Stanford guy. I'm really intrigued with this move because he doesn't have a lot of production. He had six catches for 106 yards, but that's a whopping 17.7 yards per catch. And he's played a lot on special teams, but I like the potential for this because I'm assuming he's played most. I haven't looked at the snap reps. He's played primarily outside, hasn't he?
So he played 43 snaps in the slot last year, 191 out wide. So either X or Z. So yeah, I mean, so it's basically a 5-to-1 snap outside to inside ratio. You know, one of the things that you look at for him is he's a big body guy that works hard in the run game. He's not a guy that you're going to expect much from. I mean, seven, or sorry, not seven snaps. He you know, a guy that in his time, you're talking about 7 snaps as his as a rookie, 36 his second year. And then what's been really interesting, Jess, is, you know, obviously last year was Jim Harbaugh, right? So not a shock. He was about a 1-to-1, you know, a 1-to-1 pass to run snap ratio in his 244 snaps. But the year before, so I think that was still Brandon Staley, correct?
Yeah.
23 snaps played. He blocked for 14 of those snaps and only went out for routes 9 times.
Interesting. So is he Zach Pascal then?
Right, exactly.
But a younger, and what's interesting, because I actually, you know, I didn't run, like, I ran across his TikTok where he was saying goodbye. It was his personal thing. It was just on my For You page. And he was saying, he kind of addressed why he's leaving LA. And he has a little bit of a following out there, and people are saying, well, why are you leaving LA? He said he, you know, it makes it sound like there's some guaranteed money because he said he's got to take care of his family. And that usually that's tied into money. And he said the Cardinals really wanted him. I'm interested in seeing what type of contract it is. If it's like a $2.25 million type deal. But it's kind of like what Zach Pascal got, but I actually kind of like the upside of this move because not only is he fast, he's really quick. That 3 cone that he had, 6, 7, 8, that's incredible for his size, which gives him the ability to move in and out of spaces. And the Cardinals like long receivers. And what we saw last year was a move away from Greg Dortch as playing in the slot. And they played a lot more Marv inside and a lot more Michael Wilson inside. And so this gives you some, and Zay Jones returns. We talked about him where he can play on the outside. The Zay Jones and the Fehoko moves I like as low cost, high potential type additions. I'm not saying Fehoko's going to go off for 800 yards, but you get 300 yards for him on 20 catches. That's a really good start. And if you get, you know, 50 catches for 600 to 800 yards from Zay Jones, also very, very good production, especially if you can get Michael Wilson either to up his production about 800 yards, or if you, like I said, you want a guy, if you got 2,000 yard guys in Marv and Trey McBride, you want another guy that can get 800 or two that can get 600 plus. And then if you add kind of big play with Fehoko, with his athleticism, I'm really intrigued by this move.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting to see, like, even simply as like what the guaranteed money is and if he makes the roster type thing. That's the nice thing about, you know, typically when we do this part of the show, right, we go, oh, this is what we know. This is a little more fun in the sense that we're talking just, you know, kind of speculating because we don't have the numbers yet. And so, you know, you'll have to wait and see what those numbers come out, and then they'll tell us more of a story about, oh, okay, this is what, you know, because like we were talking last week, I don't know if we talked about this on the air, right? But, you know, if they were to draft, say, Kenneth Grant, you know, at 16, that's a pretty full room already. And then adding a rookie, right? You look at it and you go from a salary structure standpoint, like who makes the most sense to cut? And you're like, well, probably LJ Collier because he's got the least amount of guaranteed money. So, you know, the same thing with Curran, Fehoko, like those guys, when we get those numbers, it tells us more of the story, like where are they at? And even, you know, and I doubt either of them do, but even say like a $2 million salary guarantee, it doesn't mean much in that case. But no, it
does mean, like, we had Chris Moore last year, right? And they did have some guarantees for him, and he initially made the, actually he was on the practice squad initially, but he was still getting that money and got elevated a couple of times. So it's you know, that's the part we're missing. But I will say that the Fehoko, based on the lack of another, which is another one of the interesting things, some of these bigger named older receivers, Keenan Allen, Amari Cooper, these guys are still out there available. Well,
Jess, look what freaking and Cooper Kupp got. And, mm-hmm. and you know, I think, and I could be wrong, I'm double checking my numbers here, but I think Keenan Allen was slightly more productive last year than Kupp. 70, sorry. And then what did, I don't think Kupp put up over 700 last year.
I think he was at about 67, 710.
So right around the same. So like, that's, I mean, you're literally saying like, hey, this is a guy that's like, people don't want to pay $12, $15 million for these guys. And don't get me wrong. Like, Jess and I are not saying Simi Fehoku or Zay Jones are at all on the same level as Keenan Allen or Cooper Kupp. But also, their combined salary is a third, if not, you know, a fourth of what you're going to pay Cooper Kupp or, you know, or likely Keenan Allen at this point. Like, that's the hard thing with all of that. And so, you know, it doesn't preclude you from making moves, especially when you look at it, right? Just like, you go through all their moves that they made. Evan Brown, 2-year deal, right? Zay Jones, 1-year deal. Jacoby Brissett, 2-year deal. LJ Collier, 1-year deal. Josh Sweat, 4-year deal. Akeem Davis-Gaither, 2-year deal. Jake Curran, 1-year deal, right? Mykel Walker, 1-year deal. Dalvin Tomlinson, 2-year deal. And then Simi, a 1-year deal. So, like, it they tell you, like, in the contracts for the most part, like, hey, Dalvin Tomlinson, he's a guy that we're counting on. Obviously, Josh Sweat, Evan Brown. A guy like Jake Curran, it's like, hey, if he makes the roster, that's great. But from anything else, like, we're not expecting anything, right? So,
yeah.
You know, what they do, it tells the story of what their expectation is. And if you get anything more, you just chalk it up as a win.
Coming up next on the Rise of Spirit podcast, best our Cardinals talk on the web. Let's move on. A couple of mock drafts that came out this week. Let's react to them. That's coming next on Rise of Spirit. We're back on the Rise of Spirit podcast, best our Cardinals talk on the web. With the first week of free agency in the books, that means we got the two big names releasing new mock drafts, one from ESPN's Mel Kiper, and then one from the NFL Network's NFL Media's Daniel Jeremiah. And it's interesting because both project something interesting for the Cardinals. On Kiper's, it is perhaps the surprising one, and that is Will Johnson, Michigan cornerback, falls all the way to 16th. And what Kiper's wrote is that Johnson's 10th on his board, and I've seen projections where he goes top 10, nearly top 5. And so this was a case, I think, as he's putting the board together, it's not necessarily a need for the Cardinals because we do like where the cornerback room is. You've got Sean Murphy Bunting. I know people don't love him. They think that was a terrible signing. He actually had a decent year.
Half of the year, yeah.
Yeah, they got Starling Thomas. He's all right. You've got Max Melton, second round pick last year. They're kind of counting on to grow. And then you've got Garrett Williams inside. Sure, you could add Will Johnson to that group. And I wouldn't preclude them if Will Johnson's on the board. He does offer size. He's nearly 6'2". We don't know what his long speed is. That he didn't run at the combine with the toe injury, and he's not going to be at his pro day because he just injured his hamstring. So that is kind of a concern because in the last 9 months, he's had a shoulder injury. He had, I guess, what he would call turf toe because it was a toe injury, and he talked about having torn ligaments, so that's a kind of a turf toe thing, and then recently a hamstring. I know you have said, I don't know if it's on the air or off the air between the group checks that we have, that if Johnson were available, you'd have no problem with it. I'm starting to worry a little bit based on the number of injuries he's had over the last year.
Yeah, I mean, foot stuff, ankle stuff, knee stuff, we always talk about it, right? Like, it's definitely position dependent. You know, my concern is always with bigger guys that live off explosiveness, that they won't be able to get back into that type of play. I have less concern typically about guys like Johnson, things like that. So, you know, the biggest thing to me is that he continues to have like, or pick up nagging lower body injuries. So it's like, you know, he had the foot, toe, whatever you want to call it. And then that's led to hamstring issues, right? Like, so to me, that's where the red flag is like, is he not able to rehab consistently? Is he not rehabbing correctly? And then it's leading to issues on other things. Like, those are obviously questions that we don't have answers to, right? Like, you know, a singular injury or things of that nature are not a big deal since catastrophic stuff that, you know, we saw with like Marshawn Lattimore.
Yeah.
Things like that. But that is the one thing to watch about Will Johnson is that, you know, why is he struggling to come back from this injury? Obviously, we don't know what the extent of the injury was, and now he's got a hamstring that's going to hold him out of the pro day that was supposed to be Friday.
Yeah, it's supposed to be this week on Friday.
So we're recording on Tuesday, and, you know, it was just announced, I think today or yesterday, that he's not going to participate with the hamstring. Those are the little, like, things to watch. Obviously, you know, Garrett Williams, for instance, ACL, like, ACLs, like, it's a different thing for an athlete that isn't playing at a heavyweight, that isn't, you know, not that they're not explosive, but they're not dependent on explosiveness off the line of scrimmage and things like that. You know, and so that's how I look at that a little different. But Johnson's an alpha, man. Like, he would be the guy that comes in and he's all of a sudden kind of the guy in the room. You know, he's not the athlete that like a Sauce Gardner is, but same type of mentality, same type of feel for the game and understanding. And it's interesting because, you know, going into this year, he was considered by many to be kind of a top five lock, and maybe even corner, like, you know, pure corner one. You know, you have the Travis Hunter situation. And now between the you know, being banged up, obviously Michigan having a down year, he's looked at more in that, like you said, like that 10 to 20 range. And it just feels like we're, you know, I hate, you always hate throwing names out there, right? Like, and stuff like that. But when you're talking about a guy that fell that probably shouldn't have, and, you know, obviously hindsight's 2020 and things of that nature. But there is some, like, Darrell Revis stuff there, right? Like, Revis went in the mid-teens. You know, he was looked at through the lens of, like, is he athletic enough and things of that nature. So I'm not saying that it's a perfect one-to-one comparison, but just the lead up to the draft seems to be similar. And he has those, he has that dynamic about him that he could be something that is special in that way.
And that would be, I mean, and to get a guy like that, you'd make it work. You can never have enough guys who can cover well. And if you could at some point trade Sean Murphy Buntenting. He's got 100% of his salary guaranteed this year at $7.7 million, but a serviceable cornerback, especially it could be a midseason move. You know, Star Thomas, you could easily move him to the bench. That I don't think you'd have a problem with that. And then kind of like how they worked both Max Melton and Star Thomas together, you could do that between Max and Johnson, or even Murphy Bunting and Johnson, kind of going with a four-man corner rotation that they did last year. And that would be 100% all right. But it would be a mild surprise based on everything that we've seen, because it still feels like, and we're going to talk about this later in the show, sort of like everything has been all about edge defensive line, offensive line, or even just edge defensive line, and they filled that. And that'll kind of lead us to the other one, and that's Daniel Jeremiah's mock draft, where the Cardinals actually pass on a couple of notable pass rushers that go a little bit after them. Mike Green, the kid out of Marshall, 17 sacks on the year. They pass on him. He goes number 17. They pass, and I wouldn't necessarily call it a pass on him, but Donovan Isiraku goes number 19. The Boston College, the two super productive pass rushers. And instead, the Cardinals, and instead of going, and this is going with like a Kelvin Banks on the offensive line, instead of going with a Tyler Booker on the offensive line, which, strangely, Tyler Booker doesn't go in the first round of this mock draft, even though I think DJ has him as a top 10 ranked player. And the Cardinals go with Gray Zabel, interior guy who's played all over the offensive line. He played tackle last year because he was the very best that they had at North Dakota State, but he's played all over the line, and he could, like, viably, he could jump in right in and be a starting right guard for them. The issue being, is that the best option for them at number 16 when you've got Tyler Booker on the board, especially if you're looking offensive line? Tyler Booker still on the board. You could go Kelvin Banks on the board. It appears that Josh Simmons is still on the board. It feels like, I think it would be a long shot for the Cardinals to go that route over a Booker, over a Simmons, over a Kelvin Banks.
I love Zabel. I think he's going to be a fantastic player. So I don't really have an issue with it. My issue becomes this feels more like a need pick, right?
Yeah. That is the one spot where you're like, they need a starter.
Yeah. And so you just kind of pencil in, I guess. Right. And here's what I'll say. DJ has been very consistent with Zabel. He had Zabel going 18 in the previous draft. So it's not like he took him from, the 50s or whatever into the first round. So he had him going 18 to the Seahawks in the last draft. And then in his first one, let's see, he did not have him in the first round. So you look at it, you go, okay, well, he's been consistent with where the whereabouts he puts Zabel in his, draft, the last two at least. So he's definitely hearing those type of things, right?
Yeah, that's what it sounds like, that there are teams that really like him.
And so that, that begs the question, are the Cardinals going to be one of those teams? It would be an interesting departure from the two drafts that we have based on Monty Austin for it, right? So in his two drafts, he's not taken a single FCS player.
Big programs. Ohio, like in the first round, Ohio State, Missouri. Those are big time programs.
Right. And even in the second rounds, we're talking Big Ten with Rutgers, right? We're talking LSU in the third round. We're talking Syracuse, Florida State, like Illinois, Stanford. It's not like, and no shade, obviously, but it's not like we're talking about Tulsa, Colorado State is their top players, right? They're going big programs. So it'd be a departure for sure to see that happen. Doesn't mean it can't, doesn't mean it won't, just would be a very big change from what we've seen in the two Monty drafts, because not only would it be the first time they take an FCS player, but they do so with a top 20 pick. That would be, again, I love the player. I think it'd be a good fit. He can, slot in at right guard from day one. And you look at it with a healthy Jonah Williams, you say, okay, well, we got our offensive line set, but at the same time, it does feel a little rich.
If you're looking at offensive line, if Josh Simmons, Kelvin Banks, Tyler Booker are all on the board, do you take Zabel over any of those guys?
No, obviously Simmons would be about the medicals if they check out. I think Simmons would be the ideal guy because he's a guy that's played left tackle. He's played right tackle. You know, he gives them some flexibility, and he would be a guy that, you know, has familiarity with obviously the coach and things of that nature. Here's what I'll say. If they were to do this and they take Zabel over Simmons or Donovan Jackson or any of the other guys, Booker, Banks, whatever, it would speak to what the new line coach is thinking, right? Because if they have their pick, if you say that only Will Campbell and the was it Mimbu,
yeah,
are off the board, and so you take Gray Zabel, I think, and correct me if you disagree, but I think we would tend to think like, oh, Fry must have been like, no, I don't want Simmons, and not I don't want, but like, hey, I don't think the knee is right, or you know,
that would make sense. That would make sense.
You know, it would be more like telling to us. The one name that I wanted to bring up that's not an offensive lineman that I've seen, I don't know what the word is, like, I don't know, confusion or, you know, maybe disputing or however you want to say it about is Jahad Campbell, right? So a guy that you and I both like a lot, impressed with his size, length, speed, gives you a little bit of everything, can be a guy that plays on the edge at times, can be a guy that's your, you know, inside backer. Been fantastic doing both, and a really versatile player that does have a singular position but can be flexible. So I know fans are like, oh, we don't want another guy that doesn't have a position. No, he's an off-ball linebacker that can play off the edge if needed. I've seen him like all over the place. So, you know, for instance, in this one, Daniel Jeremiah has him going top 10, which would be kind of like a insane thing for a guy that, if you look at him as just an off-ball backer, right? Like,
yeah,
top 10, we've talked about it before. If you do that, like, I mean, you got to be Roquan Smith, right? Like, you got to be that.
You got to be player. Isaiah Simmons, right?
Right, exactly. You know, and so then you look at Kuiper, and Kuiper has him going after the Cardinals. So is there, I mean, obviously there's always, you know, we could throw out Jackson Dart, we can throw out, you know, all these names, right? But is there a bigger disconnect between a guy and where he's going to fit and go?
I think a lot of it has to do is the belief or the value that a number of the teams in the NFL put at that particular position. Like you look at the Philadelphia Eagles, who haven't spent a first-round pick on off-the-ball backer since, what, 1994, I think is what I heard on Kuiper's podcast a few weeks ago. But yeah, to see him go from top 10 to middle of the second round is an incredible disparity. And I know Kuiper really, really likes Campbell in terms of his ability. And I wouldn't mind. I would kind of like him in Arizona. But at the same time, I think from what we know about Jonathan Gannon, and I think as well for Monty Austin Ford, is they don't put first round value on the position, even when the talent is great.
Yeah, and that makes sense to me. You know, I think he's a guy that fits. I mean, another guy that is another intriguing, just watching where he fits, is like the kid out of U of A, right? Tet McMillan.
Yeah.
You know, we've seen him top 10, we've seen him top 15. Both guys have him going in the 20s, right? So Kuiper has him going to the Broncos, and then Jeremiah has him going to the Chargers. So, you know, both AFC West teams and things of that nature. So it's really interesting because, you know, you mentioned Will Johnson, right? He goes 15, I think, in Jeremiah. So they're right around the same page in terms of value. Mike Green, same thing. Mike Green goes at 15 and Kuipers goes at 17. Like you said, the Cardinals pass on him and Jeremiah. So like those guys are all kind of thought to be the same. It's just interesting to see these guys that are top five in some and then outside the top 20 and others. And like, where do these guys fit in? I mean, Jahdae Barron's another one, right? Like Kuiper's got him going 24 to Minnesota. I think, Jeremiah's got him going 11. Like those are wild variances. And what that's telling me is a couple things. The first thing is that there's really not a consensus after Cam Ward, Travis Hunter, Abdul Carter, right? Like those are the three guys in this draft. After that, it's kind of just pick your flavor, what you like. I mean, we mentioned Mimbu, you know, all of a sudden he's OT1. Will Campbell, who's been a steady force at LSU, had some short arms in the measurements, and now he's, you know, 9'10" in both of these type of exercises. You know, Barron, McMillan, we've seen these guys all over the place. So I think, and obviously we'll know more in April as the draft is approaching, but more than anything, it just really tells you that there's no consensus after those top three guys.
Yeah.
And so what's going to happen is you're going to have a lot of opinions on a lot of different guys. And so it'll be interesting to see if we're able to cut through the noise and find what the Cardinals want to do. Obviously, the easiest thing would be like, hey, let's just pencil in Josh Simmons, right? Like Ohio State fits what they need to be the third Ohio State guy they draft in the first round in 3 years. But if it ends up not being Simmons, you know, where is the fit and how do they look at these guys and go after them?
Coming up next on the Rise Up Spirit podcast, the SR Cardinals talk on the web. We've got one segment left and we're going to talk about the Cardinals and how things have changed in the draft after free agency. That's coming up next on Rise Up Spirit. We're back on the Rise Up Spirit podcast, the SR Cardinals talk on the web. One final segment on this edition of the show, episode 648. And still talking NFL draft, but now kind of where we what kind of the top positions where I think the Cardinals are going to now prioritize. They addressed the defensive edge by signing Josh Sweat and re-signing Barron Browning. Victor Demakeji left, so I think maybe we might see Jesse Luketa come back. I'm still possible on that, but I think they kind of like the edge group that they have. They upgraded the defensive line, big name in Dalvin Tomlinson, and they added LJ Collier, bringing him back. And so you've got a really good six-man, you know, group for now. And everything leading up to free agency, didn't it feel like that everything about the draft was either 1-2 edge defensive line or defensive line edge when you came to the first round? Didn't it always feel like that up until free agency started?
Yeah, and I'm not positive how much that's changed, because as much as I love the moves and you know, we gave our Josh Sweat grades last week and things of that nature, the reality becomes it doesn't change what they need. It just changes how urgent it is. You mentioned corner, right? And you had a astute observation, like you really can never have enough. Like you can always get more corners, and you always need more corners. The same thing you can say about any of the front four, three, edge, whatever, however you want to look at it. Defensive line and edge rushers are they're something you can address every year. And we talked about it, right, with the Eagles, right? Like they drafted Jordan Davis, and then what they do the next year? Oh, okay, we'll draft Jalen Carter, and then what they, you know, what they do the next year? So like, just because you get one, and even if they're a good one, it doesn't change how you go about it. And I think that is going to be Monty's mantra. Like, elite positions, players that play the defensive line, the offensive line, corner, you know, obviously edge, those we'll keep taking swings at those guys. Like, we'll, you know, it doesn't necessarily mean first round, but those will be premium picks yearly. And that's something that you and I talk about all the time, right? Like, the previous regime really didn't do that, especially at corner and defensive line, right? Like, it was right. it was always like, hey, we got these two, and we liked guys, Lucky Fotu, goodness, who was the other one that year that they drafted?
Rashard Lawrence,
right? We liked those guys. It's not that we disliked them or that they weren't good. I mean, Cameron Thomas and MyJ Sanders, we liked both of those guys coming out. But like, when those are the investments you make at those positions, it says more about your scheme and your building than it does anything else. I mean, think about it. Like,
well, let's go back to those first few drafts, and who are those first round picks, dating back to when Keim started? It's guard, it's safety, it's off the. You've got to tackle in 20. You've got to tackle in 2015. You've got off the ball in 26. No, you've got defensive tackle 2016. So okay, 2017 off the ball. 2018 quarterback. 2019 off the ball. Oh no, 2019 was Kyler. So they quarterback, yeah, 2 years in a row. Then they off the ball 2 years in a row. They've, yeah, also got Buda Baker as a second round pick. So they're taking guards. They're taking linebackers. They're taking safeties in the first two rounds. They took Trey McBride in the second round rather than taking cornerbacks and pass rushers and tackles.
Right. And even then, like you said, like, you look at it, right? Their first draft, they got one great player, Tyrann Mathieu, and he was a safety, right? Alex Okafor had a very nice career for a fourth round pick, but it's not like, you know, he was a star. And then you look at the next draft, like you said, a safety linebacker type in Deion Buchanan, Troy Nicholas,
the only Notre Dame tight end to not do anything in the
right NFL. Kareem Martin, and then their next draft, they get two guys that like have really nice careers, right? DJ Humphries and Marcus Golden. And then they whiff on their next. I mean, and obviously hindsight's 2020, but the 2016 draft is literally what ended Keim's career. you know, you can't whiff on your first round pick, trade away your second round pick for Chandler Jones, who was obviously fantastic, and then whiff on the first corner you took ever. Like, think about this, Jess. This is a wild thing to say, but they didn't take a corner for three entire drafts. That's just like, That's complete negligence from the scouting and the roster development department. Like, it's one thing if you're like, hey, we're not going to take a first round. You know what? We won't even take a second round. But like, to go three entire drafts and never take a corner, it's just a wild indictment of how team building. And then your first one that you take was a converted running back who ended up, you know, you drafted outside of the top 90. Like, that's that. By the way, then you didn't even take another one until the sixth round in 2018, 2 years later. And the first top 75 corner you took, hey, guess what? He's good. Like, it's almost like roster building is not incredibly difficult if you just take players at premium positions consistently, but that's another story for another day. So yeah, I mean, that's the thing, is like, I don't, going back to the Jeremiah thing, like, I like Gray Zabel, so I don't want this to come across as Gray Zabel slander. But based on what we've seen from Monty, I don't think that Gray Zabel will be the guy that they look to bring in, because he's always built from the premium positions first.
For me, I'm thinking it felt like, at least it felt like, before free agency, if we had to look at a positional priority, there were a top three, and that was, I think, even pretty even 1A, 1B, edge and defensive tackle, and then a clear number three would have been tackle on the offensive leg, tackle slash guard. I feel like that, and as unsexy as this is, that it might be, if everything else is even, say if you've got three players, if you've got an offensive line, a defensive lineman, and an edge guy all rated kind of the same, I personally feel like offensive tackle with a little bit of versatility probably has pushed up to number one.
And I think those three are still kind of number one through three with a bullet. And then you look at, like we said, like, hey, if you get a guy that you think is a star or can be a star.
I mean, right? I wouldn't throw out receiver either, because there are some, like, you could get another Ohio State guy in Ibuka. You could get Matthew Golden. I think Matthew Golden would be a great fit offensively. But, like, I wouldn't, like, what we've talked about is, like, I don't think you can almost rule out anything. I don't think you rule out cornerback. I think you rule out of necessity, you rule out cornerback, you rule out running back, you in prop tight end, likely, even like, but it would be hard to turn down, say, a Colson Loveland or a Tyler Warren if you were available. But obviously, running back, you're going to throw that out. You probably throw out safety. Probably. You probably throw out linebacker based on what we know about the belief of the positional value. And especially, like, you also look at the free agency. What have the Cardinals done each year in free agency? First year, they brought in Kaiser White, a legitimate starter, 2 years, $10 million. They brought in Josh Woods, a special teamer who turned into a starter. They brought in Mac Wilson the next year, special teamer turned starter. This year, they're bringing in Akeem Davis-Gaither, presumably to start, special teamer turned starter, or Michael Walker, who was special teamer, previously starter. That is a position they think they can just fill with guys until they find one who's a star. And so I like, and here's another reason why I like them taking a tackle, is that they're going to build that offensive line. And I think with a little bit of uncertainty at right tackle, whether it's Josh Simmons, whether it's Calvin Banks, even if Jonah Williams is healthy, I 100% would not. I would expect them to take that rookie, that first round rookie, and play him a right guard for a year, and then bump him out to right tackle. I think that would 100% be the plan for Josh Simmons or Calvin Banks, or I mean, if they ended up valuing a Donovan Jackson that much, I think that would be just 100%. They could go guard right there, but I think Jackson would be a trade down scenario. But I could 100% see them taking Josh Simmons or Calvin Banks there at number 16, playing him at a right guard for a year, and then slide him in over to right tackle in 2026.
Yeah, and that's the thing. You know, one of the things that free agency should do is free you up to be able to do that, right? And kind of what Jess is saying so astutely is, like, free agency should allow you to continue to build based on your vision and not on what your need is, right? And so while you're looking to compete this year and get guys, you know, we talked about it, like, if they sat there and they were like, Simmons, we're not comfortable with his knee, and then Banks is gone, and obviously Campbell and Mimbu are gone, and they're not big on Gray Zabel, and they go, okay, you know, we can't move down. We love Kenneth Grant. We love Shamar Stewart, right? The other Texas A&M guy that's a freaky athlete that can do some things. We love that guy. we can take either one of those guys at 16 and know that in year one, and I talk about this all the time, especially with defensive line types, like in year one, he can be a 40% player and we're comfortable with that, knowing that in year two or three, we can move him up and all of a sudden he's, one of the better defensive linemen, edge rushers, interior defensive line, whatever it is in the league. I mean, you look at Jalen Carter, for instance, right? Like he went into a loaded defensive room and he got 50% of the snaps as a rookie. Had a decent rookie year, nothing to write home about, nothing where you're like, this guy's a game wrecker. And then he came this year and he played 80% of the snaps. Like that's what you're looking at. And that's what the goal is. And so I think that's how you kind of look at this year and you kind of dissect this year and you go, okay, we'll be prepared. And I know people hate looking at it like this, but like we'll be prepared in 2 years when Dalvin Tomlinson is gone or when we're ready to move on for Dalvin Tomlinson. And now Kenneth Grant takes the reins or to your point, like, hey, we had Josh Simmons, we slotted him in at right guard. Jonah Williams contracts up. Beach wants to come back for age 36. It's going to be the primary backup, but now we've got these young guys, Paris Johnson Jr. and Josh Simmons at our left and right tackle for the foreseeable future. Like that's what good teams do. They're not chasing the one player they're missing. They're preparing for the future, but also getting impact players that can have impactful play in the present.
Yeah, that would be ideal. I think I wouldn't exclude cornerback or receiver.
No, but I don't. Like you said, I think, and I kind of did a little exercise with it yesterday. I just kind of took the consensus big board and I went from 10 to 32 and I just put all the players down. And then you look at it and you go, okay, so let's remove Tyler Warren, Colston Loveland, right? Tight ends, Malachi Starks, Nick Amenawori, the safeties, right? And then we take out Matthew Golden, Emeka Egbuka, Luther Burton, the wide receivers, and then Omari and Hampton, the running back. So you take out those guys, right? And the rest of them you have, and you have this list of guys, Will Johnson, Jalen Walker, Shamar Stewart, Kelvin Banks, Mykel Williams, Mike Green, Jahdae Barron, James Pierce, Kenneth Grant, Josh Simmons, Tyler Booker, Jihad Campbell, Walter Nolan, Derek Harmon, and Donovan Ezeruka. Like, you look at all of those and you go, yeah, I don't mind any of those names. Because there's not a guy that you're like, I got to have him. Like, maybe you'd prefer Jalen Walker over everybody else, but there's not one guy that you're like, that's the guy with the bullet. However, you do look at the positions and you go, okay, I'd stack them this way. You know, like you said, maybe offensive line's one now, and then defensive line edge is still 2A, 2B, but you're not going to take offensive tackle 5 over defensive lineman 1, right? Because you don't have to. And that's the nice thing about it.
And with that, we will wrap up this edition of the Rise of Sea Red podcast, the Bizarre Cardinals Talk on the Web. This is episode 648. We have more topics to cover. We still got a little more than a month before the draft, so we will be heavy on draft talk content with the shows to come. We'll start previewing positions next week, I think. But there's more to react to. That's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Root. We'll be back again soon. Thanks for listening, as always.
Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise up, Red Sea, be Red Sea Red, and of course, Rise Up, Sea Red.